Your Mike Malloy Show, 6 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman sitting in for the spring-breaking Malloys. That's right, it is I, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker, once again, drafted into duty to be your broadcast media because, well, someone's got to. I hope you heard that interview, the hour there with Congressman Hank Johnson. We ran short on time, right up against the wall there, against the clock, so I didn't get to give his website. I spoke to him just now over the break and said, well, what the hell can people do about this? What the hell can we do to bring some accountability against the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and those scoundrels and spies and sleazeballs, frankly, who are willing to spend $12 million to go after people simply because they don't agree with them politically, who are willing to try to discredit, to put, you know, out forged documents, to spy on their home internet networks, to use their families, personal details about their families against them. And yes, that is exactly what they did with me when I showed up inside those documents, my picture, my family, information about me that they were planning to use against me. Congressman said that he actually seemed kind of had a tough time coming up with what to do. He said, please email your congresspeople and tell them you want an investigation into the U.S. chamber plot. I think we can also afford to thank him for, frankly, stepping forward, Congressman Johnson, for stepping forward and trying to do something about this with everything else that's going on in the world and with the U.S. chamber and their powerful, powerful lobby in Congress. Whether they're supporting these Republicans, 97% of the money that they spend goes to these hard right-wing Republicans to keep them in or to use it against Democrats who oppose them. It's really appalling. So Congressman Johnson can be reached at his website. His campaign website is hankforcongress.com, and his House website is hankjohnson.house.gov. A couple people in the chat. Oh, and we will be speaking momentarily with Stefan Lewandowski in a sort of kind of related story to this U.S. chamber plot. An interesting one concerning sock puppetry, since they were planning to create these fake personas in chat rooms and blogs and use social media to try to create fake scandal to discredit journalists like myself and Glenn Greenwald and others. So we're going to go to Stefan Lewandowski with his interesting story in a moment here. But in the bradblog.com chat room for Earth, actually it was iCurry for me asked, Brad, can you sue them? Well, if the Department of Justice won't take action, then I will certainly consider doing so. I have spoken with some attorneys, you know, these going up against the most powerful law firm in the world. I'm sorry, the most powerful lobby in the world and one of the most powerful law firms, Hunton and Williams, who was putting together this plot, is not easy for anybody. It takes funding, it takes money, or it takes a deep pockets law firm who's willing to do this pro bono and go against these guys big time. And I'm weighing my options. We will just say that for now. For Earth adds in the chat room that she believes they're like mobsters, intimidating and threatening families. You're damn right. That's exactly what they are like, mobsters. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and their mafia-like tactics. Very quickly, let me get to Delta Doc in Portland, who has a thought on the U.S. chamber plot. Hey, Delta, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, thanks. Hey, I happen to be one of the other, fortunately, anonymous or pseudonymous targets that Team Themis identified. And that's because, as you know, I've been had some relevance in the data that we've discussed before for that went to Stop the Chamber.
Right. And I will leave it to you whether you want to say who you are as far as where you write pseudonymously. I don't want to out you here. But, yeah, I certainly was not the only one. I know you were targeted as well for the good work that you're doing by investigating exactly what these guys have done and exposing what is out there on the public record.
Mm-hmm. That's actually one of the things I wanted to mention, is that the story is a little bigger than is understood at the moment. So that will be changing, I think, with time. But I think as your question, the question that For Earth asked, I think that's a very relevant one, because and as you understand it, you put it in terms before that were of domestic terrorism, I believe you, mm-hmm. you mentioned. I think that's a real serious issue. And I hope that Congressman Johnson really pushes that side of it. And I got knocked out there. You didn't get a chance to talk with him at all about that issue and whether that's the point he was addressing in the violation of 10 U.S.C. that's supposed by Richard Clark.
You know what? I did not get to ask him about that specifically. He was a little bit late in calling, and I did play that clip, however, of Richard Clark, former terrorism czar, cybersecurity czar under both Bush and Clinton administrations, where he said, yes, he thinks, Richard Clark says, I think it's a violation of 10 U.S.C., I think it's a felony, and I think they should go to jail. He was quite clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not get to ask the congressman about it, but that's out there floating in the cyber sphere. Are you going mm-hmm. to be covering 10 U.S.C. and what exactly that means and what it is that Clark is referring to there?
I think I will be covering a little bit, but
right.
I don't think I have the details that I need to be.
Oh, uh-oh. My fault. I think I did that. Let me just say that I think that was me. So let me just say to that person I was talking to who doesn't wish to identify himself, and I understand, I will try to put you in touch with Congressman Johnson's office tomorrow. And I think that was me. Don't worry, Tony. I think I hit the wrong button. And put you in touch with him, and so you can get the information that you need on that. All right. Let me... very quickly, jump over here. And if you're on the line, hang on. I'm going to try to get to everybody. We will have open lines later on in this hour and all the entire next hour at 877-520-1150. If you want to get in on any of this stuff that we're talking about here, and we're going to talk about a lot more straight ahead. But I saw this story, and I thought, you know what? This kind of plays in exactly to what we were talking about, to the plot that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce was talking about putting together. And, let me get right to him here. Stefan Lewandowski is an Australian professorial fellow at the School of Psychology at the University of Western Australia. He's a cognitive scientist who has published more than 100 papers, chapters, and scholarly books on how people remember and think, with an emphasis on the role of skepticism. His research addresses the distinction between skepticism, cynicism, and denial, and he writes about all of that frequently as a contributor to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's Unleashed public forum and debate blog. He had a very interesting story there recently, and Professor Lewandowski, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Oh, hello. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here, and I know there's a bit of a satellite delay as you are down under there somewhere and taking some time off to talk to us. I really appreciate it. I don't want to give away the end of this story, Professor, until after the break. So give us a general idea what happened and how this interesting story with a bit of a twist came about.
Yes, there was a bit of a twist indeed. Well, the background is that, as you said, I've been posting a few discussion pieces on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's website regarding climate change and skepticism and denial and so forth. And one of the things that I was very much aware of is that there's a lot of cyberbullying going on out there that, to some extent, appears to be orchestrated, and that is targeting a lot of people, including in particular climate scientists
mm-hmm.
Around the world, and unfortunately here in Australia as well. So basically what happened was that some time ago I got an email from a person who said to me, gee, we've never met, but we seem to share a concern, namely climate change. And then this person went on to tell me that she had recently began blogging, especially about climate change,
mm-hmm.
and she was then noticed by the wrong people, as she said, in particular some well-known tabloid bloggers here in Australia. And they then directed their readers to her site. It was swarmed with what she called genuinely abusive comments, many relating to my disability, which I find very hurtful. That's her email to me. And she then went on to talk about how she has shrugged off that abuse, but that she found it very difficult. And she concluded her letter by saying, I thought that my blog might be a force for good in the world. Instead, it has made me a victim once again.
And she asked you, Professor Lewandowski, how you put up with it, how you deal with those comments and the sock puppets, and for people who don't know the sort of the fakes that that show up and leave comments, perhaps paid by the in the plot we were talking about with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they were willing to pay $250 an hour for folks to leave comments abusive or otherwise, misinformative or otherwise, on blog sites. So she wondered how it was you survived, and she seems to really have played on your sympathies with her disability and so forth. And you wrote back to her, but I'm going to hold the story there because I have to take a quick break. Speaking with Professor Stefan Lewandowski from somewhere in Australia about this remarkable story of sock puppetry. You're listening to Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, and we will give you the twist and turn that occurred in this bizarre tale after he had Professor Lewandowski received this note in response to a piece he wrote at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. You're listening to Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us for the twist. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Professor Stefan Lewandowski about this rather remarkable story. He is, of course, from the University of Western Australia, a psychology professor down there, and he writes for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's Unleashed blog. He often writes on climate-related things. He was contacted by a woman who said that she, too, writes on similar issues, and with her disabilities, how can she learn to put up with all of the people attacking her and the sock puppets in comments attacking her night and day the way that sometimes the professor is also attacked over on the ABC site. Have I reset the story there, Professor, pretty closely?
Yeah, pretty closely, except that the person who contacted me didn't herself mention any sock puppets. She was just talking about commenters as though they were people. So what then happened, just to continue the thread, is that I replied to her and said, told her that I know all about those abusive comments and that what I do with them is to simply ignore them because those people are obviously not interested in civil debate. Mm-hmm. They're just out there to turn people off and to bully them. And what I then also said was that maybe a proportion of those comments is orchestrated, and for all we know, there are only a handful of people with multiple electronic personas each who are paid to create disproportionate noise.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the phrase I used in my email. So basically, I then told her, some of these commenters may actually be sock puppets, people that are organized to leave these comments behind.
And did you hear back from her at that point, or was that the last you had heard from her?
That was the last I heard from her, and then about a week or so later after that, I found the entire correspondence published on her blog, her letter to me and my reply to her.
And what did you further then learn about her, this woman? Who had sent
Well, first of all, I was sort of taken by surprise a bit for this to be revealed on her blog because it was, you know, private correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really say anything that I couldn't have said in public, so I was quite happy for this to be out there. But nonetheless, it took me a bit by surprise, especially because it took about a week and she never got back to me before then. Well, in the meantime, another journalist working for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation published a piece in which he identified this particular person as being, guess what, a sock puppet. This person just simply did not exist. The blog was fictitious. It was run by somebody else. We don't know who at this point. And so the entire correspondence was with a non-existent person. And basically what I did was to warn a sock puppet about the existence of sock puppets.
And what unbelievable. And you can read about this story at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, but in about 30 seconds, unfortunately, what do you think that she, whoever this was, he was actually trying to do, Professor?
Well, I can't be sure, but it stands to reason that what she was trying to do with this message was to elicit some response from me that could have been considered embarrassing, I guess. You know, obviously they intended to publish this all along. As it turns out, my reply was, you know, very low-key and factual, and there was not much anybody can do with it other than read it and find it confirmed by this story. But my best guess is that this was just a fishing expedition to obtain some potentially compromising material that they could then post.
One that failed. More at bradblog.com. Thank you, Professor, for your time.
Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight.
Direct from our newsroom in Washington, in color, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's words, the bullet exploded in his face. Dr. King had returned to Memphis only yesterday, determined to prove that he could lead a peaceful mass march in support of striking sanitation workers, most of whom are Negroes.
Dan Rather, reporting for CBS News from New York. The Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. was shot to death by an assassin late today as he stood on a balcony in Memphis, Tennessee.
Confused and shocked city tonight, no one can believe what has happened. It's been just a little over an hour since Dr. Martin Luther King died from an assassin's bullet. King was shot as he stood on the balcony in front of room 306 in the Lorraine Hotel. He was alone. His aides were in the room behind him. Dr. King was rushed to St. Joseph's Hospital emergency room. He died at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time.
In a nationwide television address, President Johnson expressed the nation's shock.
America is shocked and saddened by the brutal slaying tonight of Dr. Martin Luther King. I ask every citizen to reject the blind violence that has struck Dr. King, who lived by nonviolence.
Dr. King had this to say last night about the situation in Memphis.
Somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest for rights.
Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in.
What kind of nation we are? What direction do we want to move in? Martin Luther King was shot and killed 43 years ago today in 1968. My thanks to engineer Tony Sorrentino and producer Desi Doyen for putting together that montage on this day of remembrance. Incredibly, Martin Luther King was speaking on behalf of union workers down in Memphis when he was shot, and here we are exactly 43 years later, in many cases making this same fight and these similar protests that go on. And incredibly, we have a media headed up by guys like Glenn Beck who come out and say, what? Martin Luther King, he wasn't fighting for unions. He didn't care about unions. Yeah, except for the day that he was shot and killed 43 years ago. Way to go, Glenn. Way to go, people of Wisconsin, who are standing. By the way, Brad Friedman of Brad Blog in for Mike Malloy. Our phone number here, if you want to get in on the show, if you have any thoughts on what we've talked about tonight or what we will talk about or anything else that's on your mind, is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Our chat room is at bradblog.com right now, live and lively. And, of course, we can be reached via the Brad Blog on the Twitters. At the Brad Blog, if you'd like to follow us there or send us some notes. All right. Okay. Where do we even begin after that? I wanted to actually finish up with one point from Stefan Lewandowski in that last hour. We ran up again against the clock, but you know, I had asked him what were they trying to accomplish here? What was the hope? And I think the hope was this was an Australian version of a James O'Keefe like scheme. You know, hope that he would reply back in some fashion that would embarrass him, that somehow they could use this against him, use whatever his reply was. I suspect they thought that he was going to, come back with something obnoxious, because they presume these people, in this case, it was the climate change deniers, folks like the Chamber of Commerce and the Republicans in this country, they presume that everyone else acts like them. So this professor up there in Michigan, is it, who they've asked him for his emails under public records laws, which were never meant to go after university professors. Well, he works for a university, therefore we can see his private emails, of course. The private emails didn't have anything in them that they thought that they would. Nothing to embarrass this professor. But the presumption was, well, these people all act like us. We're jerks, so I'm sure they are too, and we'll catch them. We'll catch them in their Saul Alinsky trickery. Whoever the hell Saul Alinsky is. The only people who know who Saul Alinsky is these right-wingers like James O'Keefe, and his buddies, his little punk buddies, who go out and pull these dirty tricks on people and then lie about the dirty tricks when they don't say what it is that they hope they say. Oh, it's not embarrassing enough what they actually said, so we'll just edit it around to make them look stupid if we can. That's what they do. 877-520-1150. But the folks in Wisconsin aren't putting up with this crap. They are standing up. They are fighting back. They are living in the legacy, under the legacy of Martin Luther King. They are fighting for their rights. even some of the, I was happy to see, traditionally Republican constituency, the Fraternal Order of Police up there in Wisconsin and in Ohio and elsewhere nationally, they are, you know, saying, no, this is not what we bargained for. We didn't bargain to have our rights taken away in state after state, as we are now seeing in Wisconsin, in Ohio, in Michigan, in Florida. So even the Fraternal Order of Police, who generally endorse Republican candidates, are saying, no, enough. The head, the national president of the Fraternal Order of Police, said the other day, who are these evil teachers who teach your children? These evil policemen who protect them? These evil firemen who pull them from burning buildings? When did we all become evil? He asked. Well, you became evil when the liars and cretins who you backed and put into office felt that they had the impunity to do anything they wanted, including take away the rights from fellow Americans to bargain collectively. The exact same thing that the Tea Partiers had been fooled into believing was occurring, you know, in the healthcare reform bill last year. Oh, they're taking away our rights. They're stealing our freedoms. No. You want to know what having your freedom stolen looks like? Look no further than Madison, Wisconsin, and what Governor Scott Walker is doing there. Now, do you wonder what democracy looks like? Also, look no further than Wisconsin, where the recall efforts against these Republican senators, state senators, are now underway and moving fast, faster than anybody thought would happen. The Oshkosh Northwestern reports that organizers of a campaign to oust Republican Senator Randy Hopper believe they have enough signatures to force a recall election. Organizers are in the process of verifying that the signatures came from eligible voters before filing the petition with the state. This is according to Fond du Lac Democratic Party Chairman Rich Mance. He would not say how soon the organizers would be ready to file the recall petition. In addition to the new anti-public union law, Hopper faces other obstacles related to his ongoing divorce. Yes, as it turns out, Senator Randy Hopper, Republican from Wisconsin, doesn't even live in his own district anymore. Why? Because he lives with his mistress in another district. His, what is she, 27-year-old mistress now in another district? This we learned when folks went to what is supposed to be his house, and his wife said, yeah, no, the senator doesn't live here anymore. And by the way, sign me up for the recall against him. And that's what the maid said, too. The maid signed on for the recall against him. And now there's a question, as Ernie Canning over at Bradblog today discussed. Now there's a question of whether Randy Hopper can even vote in his own recall election. Can he even vote for himself to stay in his job? If he did, well, it would seem that that would be voter fraud, because he no longer lives in his own district. This is not unusual, unfortunately, on the Republican side, where we saw a story just the other day about John Huntsman, former governor of Utah, currently the outgoing U.S. ambassador to China, the Republican governor who now has a house in D.C. He hasn't lived in the governor's mansion for 19 months, and yet he used that as his address when he voted last November in the 2010 general election. The Secretary of State of Indiana, Charlie White, is currently facing three counts of voter fraud charges, facing seven felony charges altogether. But he's currently facing three counts of felony voter fraud, because he also does not live where he said that he lived when he registered to vote. This is the Secretary of State of Indiana. the state with the strictest photo ID restrictions and voter suppression laws in the country. And why does that matter? Well, because Republicans have been on a tear to keep you from being able to vote, from making up phony cases of voter fraud against, well, let's see, minorities, students, you know, people who may not have photo ID to live where they live, but who actually do live where they live. They just don't have photo ID. They are the ones who are going to be kept from voting in 2012 as these anti-voter legislation laws move forward in state after state. You're listening to Brad on The Molloy Show, 877-520-1150. Give us a call. To the Molloy Show, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In for Mike Molloy. We'll get to your calls in a moment at 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. I just wanted to sort of close the loop there on this Republican voter fraud stuff that's going on. This epidemic of GOP voter fraud while they're making up cases against people who aren't reliable Republican voters. They're doing it themselves. They're high profile. Of course, everyone knows about Ann Coulter and her voter fraud, don't they? In Florida, in Connecticut. If you don't, go to bradblog.com/Coulter fraud and learn the whole story. But, you know, the Bush administration used unprecedented resources to go after so-called voter fraud. And, you know, one of the stories that Kimberly Prude, up there in Wisconsin, by the way, up there in Milwaukee, as I recall, she had been years ago a felon. She had never served time in jail. She had, you know, been given felony charges for writing a bad check about 5 years beforehand. And then in 2004, she was actually signed up to work the polls, and she voted absentee, and then she found out from her probation officer that she was not allowed to vote. So she called and turned herself in, essentially said, before the election, said, oh, can we please remove my vote? I didn't mean to vote because I didn't know that I wasn't allowed to as a former felon, and she was thrown in jail. She was thrown, had never served time in jail prior to that. She was thrown in jail. There's other, you know, heartbreaking stories. The guy, the Pakistani national who had lived in this country for more than 10 years. And when he went to to get a driver's license, he was handed a stack of forms. One of them was a voter registration form. He just filled out the forms that he was handed. And he never voted, by the way, but he filled out a voter registration form. He had been here for 10 years. He had married an American woman. He had a daughter, an American daughter. He was deported. He was sent back to Pakistan with his wife and daughter, who were strangers in their own country. So, you know, none of those people, and he didn't even vote. None of those people, of course, were Republicans, much less state senators like Randy Hopper up there in Wisconsin, who no longer lives in his own district, or John Huntsman from Utah, former governor, who may be running for president on the Republican ticket. Or Ann Coulter, who had her former FBI boyfriend come in and get her off the hook for committing voter fraud in the state of Florida. The documents that prove it are, of course, available at bradblog.com/Coulter fraud. Let me get to Ted here we go. Ted in Illinois. Hey, welcome to the Mike Molloy Show, Ted. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, thanks a lot. I wanted to bring the attention to a major election going on in Wisconsin tomorrow. The election is going to be for the state Supreme Court candidate.
Yep.
And her name is Joanne Kloppenburg. I wanted to make sure everyone knows in the Madison listening area, Madison has, in the suburbs of Madison, there's two cab companies, Union Cab and Badger Cab. They're going to be giving free rides tomorrow for anyone who needs it to the polls.
Nice.
And the polls are going to be open tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. I just want to make sure everyone knew that.
Thank you for doing so, Ted. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. I'm glad you have repeated it. We're going to obviously going to keep our eyes on that election tomorrow, make sure there are no problems at the polls where we can on Election Day, and we will be talking about it tomorrow night on the Mike Malloy Show. But if you're out there, Madison, this is important. It matters. Get out there and vote tomorrow, and stick around if you can at your county and watch how your votes are counted. Make sure it's done as transparently as possible. Make sure folks in line are able to vote, that they're not turned away. Do everything you can to make Wisconsin a model for democracy tomorrow and in the many upcoming recall elections that I think we're going to see in the next few months. Hey, thanks, Ted. I really appreciate the call, sir.
All right, take care. Thanks.
All right, brother. You're listening to Brad in for Mike Malloy. We got another hour ahead with open lines. I got a bunch of things that I might like to talk about. But you might have something you want to talk about. Whatever it is that you do want to talk about, whatever questions you'd like to ask me, whatever points you'd like to make, these are your public airwaves. Use them or lose them more than you already have. Our phone number is 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. Coast to coast and around the globe. Make some noise, people.